Theater presents Irene Dunne and Raymond Burr. From Hollywood, the Mutual Network, in cooperation with Family Theater Incorporated, brings you Irene Dunne, relating Henry Wadsworth Longfellow's story of King Robert of Sicily, with Raymond Burr as King Robert. To introduce the drama, your hostess and narrator, Miss Irene Dunne.
Thank you, Jean. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow's name is most familiar today as the author of such great American poems as Evangeline, Song of Hiawatha, The Wreck of the Hesperus, and The Village Blacksmith. But it was in the Tales of a Wayside Inn that the poet drew upon his vast travel experiences to retell stories in verse that had been popular for centuries in prose and narration. In reading these tales, we find that Longfellow stressed the simple things of life for his drama, and such is the story we have adapted from the Tales of a Wayside Inn. We invite you to listen now to Raymond Burr in the title role of King Robert of Sicily. Robert of Sicily sat at Vespers one evening with the voices of the choir scarcely touching his consciousness. Attired in the gold fineries appropriate of his position as the ruler of all Sicily, King Robert could not keep his mind from the many affairs of state. Throughout the long day, petition after petition had been laid before him, some large, some small, but each distracting, and so Robert, the great and powerful King of Sicily, sat in the beautiful church, surrounded by his retinue of attendants, and heard only a vague Latin word here and there. But suddenly, one such word stood out from all the others and brought him upright with curiosity. He turned to Rinaldo, his chamberlain.
Think you not that the monks sing poorly tonight, Rinaldo?
I had not noticed it, sire.
Possibly you let your mind wander. I had thought you might have caught the phrase they mumbled concerning a potentate. But apparently you do not listen as you should.
Your pardon, sire. I must admit that I was listening well to the Latin phrases. You must be referring to the part wherein they sang, De posuit potentes de sede et exaltavit.
Your memory is good, Rinaldo. Those were the approximate words. Are you able to tell me their meaning?
Well, they're part of the words of Our Lady, to Elizabeth, her cousin, in announcing the glad news of the coming birth of her child.
Only tell me the meaning of the Latin words, Rinaldo. I know full well the background of the Magnificat.
Sire, they mean this. He has put down the mighty from their seat and has exalted them of low degree.
And who has this power? Power to put down the mighty.
Sire, they mean God, who gives all men their temporary strands of power.
Then I tell you, Rinaldo, that it would be well for the monks to see that they keep such seditious thoughts in the Latin tongue and in their monastery. He shall put down the mighty, shall he? Well, I will have it known that there is no power that can push me from my throne. No power. In the morning I shall write a letter of state for all to read that I am the power above all. And that there is no weaker of kings capable of pushing me from my throne. As for now, if the monks have nothing better for me to listen to, then I shall let the monotony of their singing bring me its only worthwhile reward. Irresistible sleep.
Sleep he did. Robert pushed the thoughts from his mind that would keep him awake, and his head dropped over in a deep sleep that was not even disturbed by the departure from the church of his attendants, who were fearful of awakening their king. Sometime later, the flickering lights failed to reveal the sleeping king, and the church was locked from the outside by the sexton. Sometime past midnight, Robert sat bolt upright in the huge church. His heart pounded with anger, the result of his having dreamed that some mighty power sat higher than he. He found himself alone in the haunting gloom. A spark of fear came then to ignite his anger, and Robert became like a man possessed. He wrenched himself out of the pew, fled down the aisle of the church to the huge doors. He beat on them. He shouted for someone to open them. The old sexton fearfully flung open the doors, and Robert, with a bellow of rage, charged down the steps. The maddened king raced to the palace and down the corridor toward the reception hall. There, the sounds of a great party met his ears. There was music and dancing and laughter, which did not set well with the mood of Robert of Sicily, the king.
Stop! Stop it, all of you! I command you to stop! Quiet! Quiet! I shall have absolute quiet before I continue.
Now, I wish to see all the members of my court immediately in my private chambers. Everyone else must leave the palace at once.
And by what authority do you give such orders?
What? Who dares to question my...
And Robert turned toward the voice that had questioned his authority and was stunned at what he saw. A man was sitting on the throne overlooking the festivities, the image of Robert himself. The raging king could not believe what he saw. A man who was his absolute twin.
You! Why are you on my throne? And why do you wear my robes?
May I ask who addresses me in such manner?
I am the king. I am Robert, king of Sicily, brother of the emperor. How dare you usurp my throne?
Are you truly the king?
I am. There is no power greater than I. Everyone gathered here knows me well. I demand to know why all of you pay homage to an impostor. Speak! Is there not someone here who is man enough to explain this insolence to me? Then, as king, I command you to slay this trespasser.
I say down with this tattered intruder. We've all heard him speak words of treason. Let us run him through before he molests King Robert.
Hold your swords. Hold. Put up your swords, gentle nobles. This is a man to be pitied, not to be slain. Let us hear the poor creature out. Now tell me, who are you, and why have you come here? No one has claimed to know you, and yet you rave of being king.
I am the king, and I have come to claim my throne from you, who are an impostor.
I, an impostor? I am Robert of Sicily.
I am Robert! Do you not all recognize me? You who know me so well?
It is easy to see that this is a poor jester who, passing by, thought to bring attention to his talents with this ridiculous claim. Then let him revel in his masquerade, for from this time forward, he shall be the king's jester and shall wear the fool's cap with bells and scalloped cape. Scorpy!
Ha! 'Tis a fool's fool that would waste a second to answer the summons of his king. And I am but a king's fool. What is your wish, King Robert?
Scorpy, my own jester.
Scorpy, the sins of your past have overtaken you this night in the form of a brother fool who will be your boon companion in foolery.
Poor fool.
Take this man who claims to be king and see that he is fitted with cap and bells so that all may know of his right to foolishness.
Thus Robert, king of Sicily, was given into the care of the man who had been his own jester, and under duress was taken to Scorpi's quarters, a small room behind the stables. When Robert awoke the next morning, he was certain that this was surely a dream, that he would find himself in his own beautifully appointed room with attendants awaiting his first wish or command for the day. Instead, his eyes met the dingy gloom of a stable-like room with straw on the floor and a small basin of water in the one corner. On the wall hung the tattered remnants of his royal robes. Robert bounded to his feet.
Where am I? What is it that I hear as I move? On my head? Then, it was truly no dream. I am wearing the fool's cap just as he said I would. Well, I will show him!
Well done! Well done indeed.
Scorpion.
Yes, it is I, Scorpion. And I cannot help but applaud a clown who rehearses his day's chief foolery even before he washes his grimy face. More. Let me see more.
Indeed, you shall see more. If you will but follow me to the chambers of the man who has claimed my throne.
I prefer to wait here. You will be back.
Robert hurried to the palace, a fury within him driving him on. But as he neared the steps, he became aware of the shouts of pages and guards.
Ah, here comes Robert Little King. Make way for Robert Little King.
Good morning,
Majesty.
And where are your robes this morning?
Poor king.
Robert made his way down the long halls of the palace to the accompaniment of taunts. And he neared the chambers of the king. A large voice boomed out at him. It was the provost marshal of the king's household, not a kind man at best. And this morning he was in no mood for toying with a man who proclaimed himself king.
Hold there, clown! What are you doing in the halls before the king's chamber?
King, out of my way! I will see the man who would have my throne.
Still singing the same song, I see. It is a pair of scissors you will see first. Come, I will escort you.
Your Majesty.
Back to the stables and the taunts of Scorpion, the servants, where they cut Robert's hair in order to make him look as ridiculous as possible.
There, he is finished. Look at what we have now.
And the cowardly rabble you are to tie me here and touch my royal head.
Oh, Your Majesty, Robert Little King, we are sorry. If there's anything we could do to make you happy again, I know, let us present him with a nice crown. Provo, you will find one there on the floor.
Here it is.
Nice bells to warn his subjects that the king approaches. And now, Provo, hand me the scepter, which symbolizes all his power.
You must mean this one.
Yes, that is it. And now, Robert Little King, I crown you king of foolery.
The proud and mighty Robert had passed from king of all Sicily to Robert Little King, with his realm the world of mirth for those around him and searing sadness for Robert himself. All those who heard him proclaim his right to the throne merely laughed at him and said what a fine clown he was to choose such a daring theme for his foolery. Robert tried hard to shut his ears to what he saw and heard directed at him, but the most terrible moments of all were when the king would stop him in passing and say to him,
"Are you king?"
"Yes, I am. I am the king."
Thus Robert would be constantly reminded of his inferior position, and rebellion boiled in his heart as it began to be clear to him that no matter what he did or said, there was no one in the whole world who would take up his cause. Soon he decided that the best he could possibly do was to accept his fate as best he could. One day he and Scorpy, tired of composing rhymes and silly jokes, merely sat and talked.
Robert Little King, it is a foolish world that asks of a man that he devote his whole lifetime to the entertainment of others.
Why, Scorpy, I thought that you reveled in this type of life.
That's because many years ago I had to face the fact that there was no more life for me as the son of my parents.
Where are your parents?
My mother died shortly after I was forced to join Robert's palace staff.
Did she know why you had left home?
She did. Many years ago, she sewed me a clown suit for a performance in my first May festival. Although I had managed to acquire much education, I was always inclined to foolish things and doings. And when Robert the King came to the festival, he demanded that I come to the palace as his court fool. The mere thought of such a degradation gradually killed my mother.
Where is your father now, Scorpy?
He died of typhus germ 5 years ago. He spent his last years tending the horses in Robert's stable.
Alonzo?
His name was Alonzo, and Robert treated him like the dirt he walked on. One day he sent for my father and had him flogged, only because the king's horse had strained a tendon.
It's right he should be flogged. The man was responsible for the horse, was he not?
You would indeed make a fine king, Robert Little King. You sound like King Robert himself.
There is no excuse for a man to shirk the duties he has been given.
And you would condemn a man as a shirker if a horse goes lame? Tell me, how would you go about instructing a horse not to go lame? You make me sick, Robert Little King. From this time forward, I will speak to you only when my duties demand it.
Robert found himself entirely alone from then on. Scorpy did not even pay him the compliment of taunting him as Robert Little King. He withdrew into himself and watched and waited for the day when he would revenge himself upon them. Then one day the king summoned his two jesters.
I will have no merriment from either of you. I have a serious matter to discuss. Are you both aware of the fact that there is much stealing going on within the palace?
I am aware that stealing has been a part of every palace since the very first king.
And you, Robert Little King, have you anything to say?
I have always known of the stealing.
Very well, then. That is the problem. And to the one of you who presents the best plan for stopping all stealing, I will give land and the freedom to work that land.
Do you mean, sire, that one of us will go free from this bondage?
I know well what I would do if I were king.
See, Rinaldo, I told you that our clowns would both have answers to our problem. Robert Little King, you shall first tell us your solution, and we will put it to 3 weeks' trial. If at the end of that time you have not been successful, we shall give Scorpy the opportunity to solve it for us.
My plan is the only one that will succeed. If I were king, I should call in all the servants of the palace and give each one 20 lashes across the back.
Oh, no.
Then, having done so, I would select 2 at random and put them in the dungeon until the guilty parties presented themselves, which they would soon be forced to do by the other servants. You see that there would be an end to the stealing immediately.
Those are drastic measures, Robert Little King. As king, you would make an enemy of everyone in the palace.
There is no other answer. Discipline is the only way.
Rinaldo, you will call the provost marshal and order him to put the lash to the backs of all the servants. And 2 must go to the dungeons.
Three weeks passed. Then Robert and Scorpy were again summoned before the king.
Robert Little King, I have the results of the trial of your plan. And they are not what you said they would be.
But I do not understand. Drastic plans demand drastic measures.
During the past 3 weeks, stealing in the palace has increased tenfold. Those guilty of it have only become more and more sly. And so, in accordance with my agreement, I now ask you, Scorpy, how you would answer this situation.
Begging your forgiveness for my presumption, I say this, sire. If I were a king of men, I would act as if I were one who had been given the world's properties as a steward is given certain of the king's material goods, to do the best with them that it is possible to do. I say that the root of the stealing in this palace is the conditions under which we live. To discourage stealing, I would provide a fair share of food for those who labor for me and provide services. I would see that all men within my realm were treated with the respect due an individual, and that they were provided decent homes in which to live. I assure you, sire, that if these steps were taken, then there would be no reason for anyone to steal. And as for setting me free, if you can find it within you to do what I have said, then serving you in any capacity will be a pleasure. And the many years of my humiliation will have been well spent for this moment.
I assure you, Scorpy, that what you have said will be abided by. I will see to that.
Robert was furious, but the plan was successful. Happiness and the will to work replaced discontent and laziness for the first time. Scorpy, with the true humility of a good person, tried many times to speak to Robert, but Robert repulsed all overtures. After much insistence on the part of the king, Scorpy had accepted the land promised as his reward and was preparing to leave the palace one evening. On his way to Vespers, he paused at the stables to bid Robert goodbye. Robert was in the stable yard observing the weak attempts of a young knight to school an untrained horse.
Robert Little King, I would like to say goodbye to you before I leave.
I have nothing to say to you, Scorpion.
Easy, boy, easy. Look out! Stop going away! Look out!
Hang on! But the horse! He's knocked Robert down! Get up, Robert! He's trying to trample you! Get up! I will stop you! Now you're free, Robert! Get up and run! I will quiet him now! I'm going!
Scorpion! Scorpy, why did you do it? Why did you try to save me? You could see he was in a fury to kill.
Robert, you'll forgive me for the times I taunted you. I'm sorry for everything I've done. No, I'm glad I could help you. I wanted to let you know.
My friend. Oh, my friend.
Robert flung himself sobbing across the broken body of Scorpy. And when he arose, it was as a humble man stunned beyond imagination. To think that this little jester would give his life for him whom he had all the reason in the world to resent, not only for the things he did to him as king, but also for his rudeness to him just before his death. Robert began to walk slowly, hardly knowing where he went, with great choking sobs welling up in his breast. The sobs were not so much in grief for his dead rescuer as for the racking sorrow he felt for the kind of man he himself had been. Suddenly, his mind became aware of the chanting of the monks at Vespers.
He has put down the mighty from their seat and has exalted them of low degree.
Robert, come here, Robert.
Oh, sire. Sire, Scorpy has just...
I know, Robert. Scorpy has just given his life to save yours, has he not?
Yes. Yes, yes. How did you know?
I have known, Robert. I have known. He loved you, and there is no greater love and that a man will give up his life for his brother.
Please, sire. May I go now?
Answer one question first. Then I will leave you. Robert, you have said many times that you are king.
No.
Tell me, Robert, are you king?
Sire, as I kneel at your feet, I ask you to forgive me for my presumption. No, I am not king. I have learned in many ways that there is more to kingliness than the mere possession of a throne. I know now that each man can be a king if he so desires. No, I am not king.
Robert, get to your feet. Robert, now you are again the king.
Oh, but I am not, I am not. Where have you gone? What has happened to you? I'm wearing my robes once again. He has clothed me once again in the kingly robes. Then he was an angel, sent from God to show me how to be king. De posuit potentes, de sede, et exaltavit
Humilis. He has put down the mighty from their seat and has exalted them of low degree.
I've enjoyed this week's adaptation of the famous poem Robert of Sicily, written by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. For the past 3 months, Family Theater has been bringing you such adaptation stories, known and unknown, by the great writers of the past. We'd like to know how you enjoyed them. Why not drop us a note and tell us, and perhaps mention one of your favorite stories out of the past? We'd like to have the opportunity of bringing it to you if we can. You're all familiar with the kind of entertainment the Family Theater constantly strives to bring you. Clean, wholesome, interesting, inspiring. You're familiar, too, with our reason for being on the air. To remind you that men need God and must pray to Him with faith and confidence. Especially if they are to have God's blessing on their families and their homes. Family Theater only asks permission to send you 2 gifts each week. Good entertainment and a reminder that the family that prays together stays together.
More things are wrought by prayer than this world dreams of.
Hollywood Family Theater has brought you Irene Dunne, who has narrated the story of King Robert of Sicily with Raymond Burr as King Robert. Others in our cast were Stanley Waxman, Junius Matthews, Bill Boucher, Don Randolph, and Jim Nusser. This adaptation of the classical poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow was written by Hanley Goodrich, with music composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman, and was directed for Family Theater by Jaime Del Valle. This series of Family Theater broadcasts is made possible by the thousands of you who felt the need for this type of program, by the Mutual Network which has responded to this need, and by the hundreds of stars who have appeared on our stage, giving so unselfishly of their time and talents. This is Gene Baker inviting you to join us next week when your Family Theater will present Elizabeth Scott, John Lund, and Gene Ruth in A.A. Hayes' story of early railroading, The Denver Express. Join us, won't you? Program came from Hollywood. Here's Straight Arrow, an Indian hero, brave and daring, who brings outdoor adventure to you. Listen to Straight Arrow on Monday in the Eastern and Central time zones, Wednesday in the Mountain time zone, and Friday on the Pacific Coast for Straight Arrow. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.